Imagine if today was the day your idea changed someone's life. Imagine if you could help someone pay for college, help your community build a new playground, or help a child make it to that dream competition. With GoFundMe, it's all possible. GoFundMe is the world's number one fundraising platform trusted by over 190 million people. Every week, ordinary people meet their goals and do extraordinary things. Your ideas matter. GoFundMe isn't just for emergencies. Want to raise money for your kid's soccer team or raise funds for a small business, a creative project, or event? GoFundMe helps you turn ideas into reality. And help adds up. Fundraisers you start for someone else raise up to 5 times more. So think right now, who could use your help? Change rarely comes from waiting. It comes from someone deciding, today I'll start. Don't wait for someone else to bring change. Today, start your fundraiser in just minutes at GoFundMe.com. That's GoFundMe.com to start your fundraiser. GoFundMe.com. This is a commercial message brought to you by GoFundMe.
Hello everyone, Andy here, and here's what you can look forward to in today's episode. In today's episode, I was joined by first-time guest Ander Itarale as we review week 14 of the 2025 NFL season. I praised the Jacksonville Jaguars after their win against the Indianapolis Colts.
So this is the Jags team that I think got under the radar.
Ander discusses why he's a Bears fan and his thoughts on their loss against the Packers.
Again, it was a very compelling game that got decided on the very kind of last play of it.
And much more as we review the rest of the week. Hope you all enjoy.
Hi, everyone, and welcome back to the Across the Pod NFL podcast. I am, as ever, your host, Andy Davis, and I'm here to review week 14 of the 2025 NFL season. And as you can see, for those watching on YouTube, you can see I've got a guest on the show today, a first-time guest on the podcast today. He is a freelance sports writer and podcast. His name is Ander Itarale. Hope I pronounced that right. Ander, how are you?
Yeah, no, very well, very well. I mean, I Americanize it constantly, so I don't really care how it's pronounced. That's close enough, so that's good for me. But yeah, no, thanks so much for having me. It's an absolute pleasure to be on Across the Pod with you. Yeah, I've been looking forward to it since we met like a couple months ago, and yeah, it's great to finally do it.
Yeah, I mean, we first met. It was Jets Broncos. We met earlier this year. I can't remember whether it was. It was posted, was it after the interviews or before the post-game interviews? I remember meeting you in the cafeteria area of the, was it before that or was it in the cafeteria area in Tottenham?
No, we met 2 days prior, actually. We first met at training or the practice sessions for the Broncos, yes. Like out in wherever that was, like in that kind of country club hotel Marriott thing. It was towards the end of it, like I think people were sort of wrapping up and stuff. I remember I said hello, and yeah, it was like, yeah, it's towards the end of the day out there at Broncos practice.
I have to apologize. I completely forgot that. It's such a busy 2 months.
I know. No worries at all. Like, so it's so many people, so many names, so many faces. Like, I'm quite staggered at how much I'm able to remember of how many like people we've come across. I mean, you've done all 5 European games this year, so it's only normal you don't remember every detail.
And of course, yeah, you are a Bears fan, and you've told me off camera the reason why this is. But for the benefit of the audience, tell them what made you a Chicago Bears fan.
Yeah, it's not that interesting of a story, unfortunately, for people listening or watching the podcast. My mother's from Chicago originally. I was born and grew up in Spain, then in high school moved to the States, lived in Chicago for a bunch of years. But I was already like a Bears fan from pretty early age. Like I remember I first started watching American sports when I was like 6, 7, 8 years old, more or less. I remember the first game I have any memory of is the 2006-07 Super Bowl with the Chicago Bears and the Indianapolis Colts. So that I suppose kind of helped elevate my consciousness of the Bears. But yeah, it's more just tied to the city. Like I'm a Bears fan, Blackhawks fan, Bulls fan, Chicago Cubs fan also in baseball. So yeah, it's all Chicago teams just by the family ties. And I mean, I had been on vacation on holiday many times throughout my youth in Chicago. And then once I moved there, it was just like cemented even more so my fandom for all the Chicago teams. And yeah, even though, and despite the virtual background, I'm now back in Spain. Yeah, I still keep up with all the Chicago teams, and in this case, the Bears in particular.
Yeah, I mean, it sounds like you're fully invested in Chicago sports fandom. I mean, yeah, I love watching basketball, ice hockey. But there are a lot of games. I kind of do keep up with the scores in the hockey. When the NFL season's going on, I find it hard to really properly watch Oilers games because it's so many games to try to keep up with. And also,
I'm the same way. Like, I love the NHL. I love ice hockey. But once the NFL rolls around, I'm usually just focused. I mean, I also do football and Premier League and stuff. So, like, that's my main beat. But, like, once the NFL rolls around, it's just football and American football. And once the NFL ends, then I'll be able to pay a little bit more attention to hockey, basketball a little bit also. And baseball is mostly just the playoffs because that problem with how many games there are in hockey and basketball, doubles in baseball. So it's just way too much. But I still enjoy them. And again, here and there, try to follow as much as I can.
I think that's what you can do because we all got our own lives, and the older you get, the more stuff happens and the more responsibilities you have. But certainly, I certainly try and just watch as much YouTube highlights as I can. If they're on at a decent time, I'll watch the game in full, particularly basketball, because hockey's got terrible coverage in the UK. So, certainly basketball, I do try and watch it when I can. Okay. But no, it's all good. And certainly American sports culture is one of the best in the world. And Chicago itself, I mean, they just live and breathe sport, and particularly the Bears. I mean, the Cubs and the White Sox, a bit of split loyalties within the city. Obviously, the Bulls have got the most famous player of all time, and then but the city seems to live and breathe the Bears more than I think any other team they've got in Chicago.
Yeah, I would say it's quite, I mean, the NFL is just number one, so it does absorb all the attention and is number one. But I would say the Cubs are up there in interest. I mean, just by the, like, not per game, obviously, but again, with the amount of games that they play and the amount of interest and how packed Wrigley Field is able to remain with in this case, an 81 game home game calendar season is quite remarkable. And it is a team, I think, also where Wrigley Field is located, that does feel very much of Chicago. The White Sox struggle much more with that just because of where it's located and how it's just kind of been, the team has been managed over the years. But yeah, apart from the Cubs being, again, a team very signature of Chicago, the Bears are just number one just because of the NFL just being the most popular league in the country. And just, yeah, when it's just a sport that's so intense, so concentrated, again, it's a very short regular season. So that really heightens the amount of interest and attention it's able to generate, so to speak. So I think, it's just a team, it's just a city and a team that really go hand in hand. And this year, finally having a good season, it's been accentuated that much more, how deep the fandom for a team so historic. Also, the Bears have been around just forever. It just really shows how big, how important they are to the psyche of the city.
Yeah, funny you mentioned Wrigley Field, because I remember when I was in Chicago, I got on the subway from where I was staying to the main city. And literally the subway goes around and it goes through.
Planet Fitness has everything you need to start strong, so you can give everything you've got. from plate-loaded strength equipment and functional training areas to treadmills, stair climbers, and free weights. Our equipment is best in class, and our clubs are right around the corner, so you can make this your strongest year yet. Join the club today and save $28 or more when you join for $1 down, $15 a month. Cancel anytime. Deal ends Friday, January 9th. Are you coming? Planet Fitness. We're all strong on this planet. See club for details.
Wrigley Field, and that for me, you know, when I went, yeah. I always say this before, but when I, this is why I'm a Cubs fan, is because I love the city anyway. But yeah. And the fact that when I was going around, I literally got goosebumps. It was just the kind of the build, the way it's laid out, it's the setting it's in. It's a very magical place. Totally. If anyone's ever been to Chicago, they'll probably say the same thing, unless maybe they're a White Sox fan. But most people will say if you go past Wrigley Field, whether it's walking past it or you're on the subway or driving past it, it is just such an iconic place, such a special place to look at. So, yeah, if anyone ever is going to Chicago in the next few weeks or wants to go to Chicago, I would definitely recommend going down that way. And also go to Giordano's over Lou Malnati's for pizza.
Yeah, I could agree with that. I've always been a slightly more Giordano's person than the Lou Malnati's. I like both, but yeah, I'll take Giordano's. Of the two, Pequod's is for like the very the kind of next level pizza connoisseurs. So if like someone's interested in that, I can recommend Pequod's, which is a smaller. I think it has maybe two locations now, but yeah, it's definitely a place for deep dish pizza.
Well, let's head into our Week 14 review. So there were wins for the Detroit Lions on Thursday night as they beat the Cowboys 40-30 to keep their hopes of making the playoffs well and truly alive. The Dolphins got another win as they beat the Jets by 34-10. And the Seahawks, they won by 37-9 to go 10-3 against the Atlanta Falcons. The Baltimore Ravens lost a huge AFC North batch to the Pittsburgh Steelers as the Steelers won by 27-22. Rodgers getting his first rushing touchdown in three seasons. And the Tennessee Titans got their second win of the season as they beat the Cleveland Browns by 31-29. But our first game to cover is involving the Bengals and the Bills in a big game going into it. That was big in terms of can the Bengals keep up with the AFC North and keep their outside chances alive? And can the Bills keep the gap between them and the Patriots just to two wins and keep their spot in the seedings in the AFC wildcard well and truly solid? And what a game we got. We got a 39-34 win for the Buffalo Bills. The Bills were 10 points behind for a lot of this game, but a sequence that happened in about a minute on the game clock. We saw a Joe Burrow pass intercepted by Christian Benford return for a touchdown, and then a Burrow pass intercepted by AJ Epenesa, which turned the game round in a massive sequence. We saw Josh Allen running for 40 yards as well. A hugely damaging loss to the Bengals. I think now it all but seals their place, not in the playoffs. I think they were going to probably miss out anyway, but this confirms it. But for the Bills, I think, you know, whilst this was not a good performance for them in terms of defensively, and I think that the fact they were 10 points down in a lot of this game, you know, is a worry for them. But also they found a way to get a job done, to get the win. And that could be the result that turns their season around. Ander, what was your thoughts on the game?
Yeah, no, absolutely. Yeah, it's interesting. I mean, it's another chapter, I think, in a imperfect kind of Bills season. But again, a fun, fantastic game to watch. The NFL is one of those sports that allows for the elements to be part of the games to this degree. I mean, you can maybe see this to some degree in football, in European football, but not really. And obviously, as we were talking before about the other sports, basketball and hockey are played indoors, and baseball is a sport quite sensitive to be playing under adverse weather. So yeah, to have this game under the snow just against the elements really added a depth dimension to the game that made it extra fun to watch. Obviously two great quarterbacks going head to head, and in the end I think the best quarterback right now in this moment in the whole world is Josh Allen. I think even beyond Patrick Mahomes, who's still great, obviously, and all time is way ahead in considerations. But right now, by form and just by status and what he's been able to do this year with a again, a team that's quite lacking in many respects. I think Josh Allen has really done great with the Bills and a game that just felt like it was slipping away from them, like that fumble that James Cook had for a touch right before they were going to score a touchdown was just brutal, and still they were able to bounce back from it and wrestle the game back away from the Bengals, obviously with what you were mentioning, their two key interceptions from the Bills defense there with Benford and Epinesa. But yeah, it's just a team that's just so, again, even though it has many flaws, the Bills, thanks to Josh Allen, everything is still able to flourish. And again, Cook was very good, I think, in this game. The fumble notwithstanding. I think, yeah, the running game in general, also with Josh Allen running, obviously, as the quarterback, Ty Johnson, and just the whole core of receivers and tight ends just felt a little more productive, felt a little bit better utilized. Again, it's not like anyone had an incredible game, but Dawson Knox felt like he had one of his better games this year. Kincaid, Gabe Davis, Shakir, they all like contributed enough to like make it feel like a team that, with all its problems it's had, like chemistry wise offensively this year, can show enough poise in these kind of situations, hopefully, for them to like drive into the postseason, hopefully allow them to go far in the playoffs.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, that two tight ends that they have, you know, with Kincaid and Knox, I think it's really good. And I do feel like if you get Josh Allen at his best, I don't think many teams can stop them. Obviously, you know, the defense has to play their part as well. And they didn't do it in this game, and thankfully it didn't matter. But I do kind of think as well, you kind of think how Josh Allen's playing. If that game was against, you know, let's say, for example, the Broncos defense, or, you know, the Patriots, or, you know, in the years gone by, the Chiefs, you know, I don't think they win that game, because I think that is a worrying defensive performance. But when, you know, we've seen Jarreau making great throws to T. Higgins, I mean, it was a great catch from T. Higgins in this game with one hand. You know, you got the Chase Brown play as well, where he caught it got deemed to be, you know, inbounds. You know, this was I think overall, if you take away Burrow's two interceptions, a pretty good performance from him. But obviously Allen's was great as well. The touchdown he made, I mentioned earlier, for 40, 50 yards was incredible. And I think that is, I think, as fans, what we want. You want to have two of the best quarterbacks in the league. You say two of the best four, definitely, you know, in this game. And they put on a show. But I think both teams are definitely victims of, you know, poor defensive play. But for the Bills, you know, they're now two wins behind the Patriots. They play them next week. If they can win that game and make it a one win gap between the Patriots and the Bills in the AFC East, that's going to make for a very interesting final 3 weeks of the season.
Yeah, completely. It's just one of those things. Like, again, because the Patriots weren't expected to be this good, and again, they've been favored by an incredibly kind schedule this year. The Patriots, obviously, they've been able to take advantage of that. And again, it's not like they were a team hitting on all cylinders coming into this year with a new head coach. But yeah, it just, yeah, that's the one key thing that remains, right? I mean, if Josh Allen can get this kind of production out of himself, which was obviously always out of the question, and more pertinently out of his receiving core, all questions just fall back on the defense. And again, it's just been a defense that hasn't been quite regenerated, reformed enough, I think, over the years, as you kind of have to like piece it back together in an NFL team year by year. You can't just kind of stay stagnant, because again, there's so much turnover. And again, just because of how violent.
Planet Fitness has everything you need to start strong, so you can give everything you've got. From plate-loaded strength equipment and functional training areas to treadmills, stair climbers, and free weights. Our equipment is best in class, and our clubs are right around the corner, so you can make this your strongest year yet. Join the club today and save $28 or more when you join for $1 down, $15 a month. Cancel anytime. Deal ends Friday, January 9th. Are you coming? Planet Fitness. We're all strong on this planet. See club for details.
Sport is. Even your best guys are going to get diminished. Like Milano used to be like, again, lights out defender for the Bills isn't really anymore to that degree, and that's something they have really very much felt. Again, maybe it's not the best test. Like the Bengals are a very good offense, even though their defense is, in particular, is atrocious, almost non-existent. But yeah, I think it's just going to be, it's really going to fall on the defense to see if they can keep up enough in terms of the Buffalo Bills with their offense, with Josh Allen playing at an MVP level almost, even though he probably isn't going to win it this year. And yeah, see if they can like compete with a Patriots team that I think is there for the taking insofar as how many guys they've started to lose through injury, like in their offensive line and another a few key spots where, like, again, it just the NFL is really a sport like the healthier you can keep, the more of an edge you're going to have, you know, compared to other sports just because of the level of violence and how many injuries there are in a given season. So, yeah, it's really going to be interesting kind of how they can outduel each other. But, yeah, I think this game against the Bengals can be illuminating in the sense of, yeah, okay, how can they perform against a very capable offense with Joe Burrow, with Higgins, with Jamar Chase, with Chase Brown, even Gesicki. Like, they were really hitting on all cylinders. And again, two quote unquote unforced errors kind of just made it all unravel for the Bengals. But yeah, it's just we're gonna have to just wait and see to see how good the Bills can perform on defense.
Absolutely. And they've got a game against the Eagles in a few weeks' time. Of course, that Patriots game next week. So yeah, big test for them. They've also got the Browns and the Jets. So they're probably going to make the playoffs just through those two games alone. But I think certainly in terms of where they rank in the seedings and how they go into the playoffs in terms of form, yes, two tough games, a real test for them to show what they can do.
I would say that they can win out. I mean, I think they can beat the Patriots and this Eagles team. So again, I think they have that potential. See if they can, kind of live up to it again with their defensive flaws. But yeah, I think with how the Eagles are playing right now and the fact that the Patriots haven't been incredibly tested, like the Patriots did beat the Bills earlier this year, but I think it's a pretty good schedule from here to attend it and for them to like be able to capture their division.
Absolutely, and I think the Patriots have had an easy schedule, and I think they are slight pretenders when it comes to whether they'll win the AFC in total. But I think, you know, if they lose that game against Buffalo Bills and next week, I think it just opens up a massive jeopardy involved in the rest of their games, and they can't really mess up. And I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, momentum really goes to the Bills in that case. If they win that game, I think it all kind of shifts pretty violently again with the. In a sport that has such a short schedule, like all these games, a lot rides on all these games, and like these little momentum shifts can really decide a season.
Absolutely. And you mentioned momentum. The Indianapolis Colts started the season at 7-1. Of course, we were in Berlin when the Colts were 7-1. Were they 6-1? Either way, they're now 8-5. It's been a terrible recent run of form for the Colts. They've now lost not only the game on Sunday to the Jaguars to move second in the division. Jaguars 9-4, Colts 8-5, 36-19 win for them. I think it's now 10 years without a win in Jacksonville for Indy. But the main story is it Daniel is. Jones.
11. I think it's gone up to 11 now.
Is it 11? Okay. This year. Okay. Yeah. But they're going to lose Daniel
Jones. I think the last one was 2014. Yeah.
Right. Okay.
Exactly. Yeah. They're missing Daniel Jones. It's brutal. It's just brutal. And again, it's not, I don't want to be like cruel and say it's deserved, but it's just one of those decisions that just felt way too reckless to keep him out there with a broken leg for all these weeks or for the like last couple of weeks. It's just, again, I think it's just something that could have really been preventable. Like, they'll say, no, it wasn't a non-contact injury and bad luck happens. Yeah, but, like, he was playing injured with one of his knees injured, which put all that extra kind of strain on his other leg. And yeah, unsurprisingly, that led to an even more devastating injury. I mean, I think back to, like, we're talking basketball before, like when Kevin Durant got injured and he ruptured his Achilles tendon in the 2019 NBA Finals. Because again, he was kind of nursing injuries. I'm not sure if in that same leg or his other leg, and just kind of the extra strain on it all just kind of ended up, yeah, leading to that. So I think the Colts played with fire more so than they needed to. I understand it's a short season. You need to, like, put all your chips in the middle of the table and just kind of run with what you have, and whatever happens, happens. But I think this was, to some degree, a preventable injury. Sure, Riley Leonard isn't as good as Daniel Jones, and I think we saw that in Jacksonville. We'll probably see that in the coming weeks. But I think, yeah, I think it was badly mismanaged in that sense. I mean, because again, a lot of these players already play injured and hurt, and we don't hear about a lot of these injuries. But an injury that we did hear about, that we did know, that everyone knew, his fibula was cracked, and the fact that he powered through, I mean, more power to him that he was able to do it. But I think from the team's standpoint, I think they just pushed it way too hard, way too far. And again, it reached a conclusion that was, I think, to some degree preventable. We'll see what they're able to do now, because again, the injury to Daniel Jones adds to the injury to Sauce Gardner. And I mean, they have been unlucky in the totality of it, even though I think the Daniel Jones ones is very much on their decision making. The fact that Sauce Gardner, the guy they kind of went all in on with trading their draft picks away to the Jets and to be able to acquire him, and with how well the season was going, I think adding a piece of his caliber was a great, brave, bold move on their front. But yeah, it's just one of those. It's really unfortunate how it all kind of compounded together and has unraveled to this degree. And kind of, yeah, they've lost all sense of control of their division, of their playoff run, with how well also the Jaguars and Texans have been able to push through in these last few weeks.
Yeah, I mean, they've gone from the one seed to out of the playoffs within a month. And you think about kind of Indiana as a sports place in general. You think about Game 7 NBA Finals, Tyrese Halliburton, that injury. I think they'd have won that game if they played the full game. He's playing really well at that point. And then Caitlin Clark being out for the year as well for the Indiana Fever.
Yeah, I was thinking back to Durant, but yeah, like Halliburton's another great example. Like, because I think Halliburton is a great example because, again, I understand, like, he wanted to play in his, like, Game 7. Like, you play your whole career for that. Like, I would understand playing Daniel Jones, quote-unquote, injured if he can still sort of perform in a Super Bowl, in a final. I think in the middle of a season, I think it just wasn't worth it. But again, the comparison with Halliburton is great because it happened in the same city. It's a very similar situation of a guy that was already nursing other injuries, lower body injuries, and it just led to, like, the most devastating leg injury, which is a Achilles rupture. But yeah, no, that's a great call there. Yeah.
Yeah, it's just those three injuries combined is just horrific for the town. But I think as well, you mentioned then about they go all in on Sauce Gardner, give up two first rounders. At the time, people were saying, oh, they're giving up too much. But now you think about it, with him injured now, Daniel Jones out injured, they've sort of gone all in to actually maybe not even to make the playoffs at all. I think they genuinely could not miss out the playoffs altogether. The way he's going right now, they're currently out of it. If they're going to have Riley Leonard playing for the rest of the year, I don't think they'll make the playoffs. And it just seems the winners of this really is the New York Jets. They've got two first rounders from a guy who's barely played for the team he's gone to since. And, you know, the Colts now are going to be going through potentially, you know, a disastrous end of the season with no hope of first round draft picks next 2 years. It's amazing how a month can really just turn it around. Maybe we were in Berlin, the bad luck charms. Maybe the European media maybe set off some sort of juju, which meant we were a bad luck charm for them.
I remember, like, I wasn't at the Indianapolis Colts post game presser. Like, I was at the Falcons one, but my colleague was there and he told me about how, like, the last question of the press conference was directed to Sauce Gardner. And it was like some preposterous question about how the team has changed or how the mood has changed in the team compared to last year when he had just been traded to the team. It was just like the most like ridiculous kind of question. And yeah, that might have just been the bad luck charm that has unraveled their whole season. But it's unfortunate. Yeah, you were mentioning before their record going into Berlin, if I'm not mistaken, it was 7-2 with 7-2, yeah, 8-5 now. They were just, again, to some degree, like maybe like the Patriots were fortunate to have a relatively easy schedule to like work with and be able to build up their confidence and their performance level overall this year. But yeah, it's just with how much strain it had kept getting put on their whole team and Daniel Jones down the stretch here. It's just, yeah, unfortunate. Cause again, like Jonathan Taylor broke the record for yards, I think it was, or yards or touchdowns for a running back in the history of the Colts in Berlin against the Falcons. And yeah, they were just performing so well after such a disappointing previous season. And yeah, now they're just kind of confined to Riley Leonard. Again, I don't watch college football. People that do don't speak that highly of Riley Leonard, a run-of-the-mill backup, third stringer, almost quarterback in the NFL after what he did in Notre Dame. Yeah, and it's just, yeah, it's unfortunate, again, because everything was going so well, and it just kind of feels like, yeah, an opportunity wasted. Again, not entirely their own fault, but yeah, just kind of how it goes. We'll see if they're able to bounce back to some degree, but with the Jaguars and Texans playing so well, it just feels like it's gonna be tricky. I mean, Trevor Lawrence played one of his best game this year, and maybe one of the best games in his NFL career against the Colts. So just all these things kind of lining up against the Colts with how well the Jaguars have been able to bounce back from a very disappointing last previous season of their own. So yeah, it's just, yeah, the context has just kind of been become better said pretty unfavorable to the Colts.
Yeah, I mean, we've talked about the Colts a lot, but we've got to give the Jags praise, because what they did to that Colts team was really impressive. I mean, you had, you know, Jerrion Jones getting the fumble recovery, Eric Murray forcing that fumble. You've got like so Greg Newsome, you know, one interception, you know, five tackles. And then this is a defense that, you know, has the best run defense in the whole league this year. But even, you know, they're able to stop Riley Leonard's passing as well. I think the Jags, they've won four games in a row, five of the last six. So this is the Jags team that I think it's gone under the radar. I mean, everyone's talked about the Colts. They're going to win the AFC South potentially. Texans getting a lot of love recently for their wins against Bills, and we'll get onto their win in a bit. But the Jags, I feel like no one's really talking about them. Maybe it's because Jacksonville's not really that glamorous a place, or maybe it's not the most marketable team. But the Jags seem to be going really under the radar. They're top of the AFC South. It's been a really good first year for Liam Cohen, you know, the guy that everyone teased before the season started with his Duval introductory press conference moment. And this is the guy who, you know, talks really well, has guided Lawrence to one of his second or third best ever season as a pro. The defense has been really, really good this year. And yeah, I think the Jags, they have a lot of love because they're not getting much of it. And I think they deserve to. So yeah, fair play to the Jags. And I think, you know, again, I don't think their team is going to ruffle many feathers in the playoffs. I think it could be an easily a one-and-done team, maybe divisional round at a stretch. But at the same time, for first season and your first ever time being a head coach, Liam Cohen deserves all the praise in the world.
Yeah, no, absolutely. I mean, I saw a tweet a few hours ago that was highlighting a question that was asked to him after the game. The question went as follows: when you have a team that feeds off disrespect, how does that continue to go when that respect starts to come? And he answered, I don't know if we'll ever really get it. So that's the beauty of it. It ain't coming. You know that. And it's just, and someone kind of highlighted how that quote really exemplifies how nice of a fit he is for the Jaguars. Cause you mentioned there before, I mean, they are effectively the smallest market in the NFL. Again, Green Bay is smaller than Jacksonville, but the Packers aren't a small market team as such because of their fandom and how just historic of a team they are. The Jaguars are effectively the biggest afterthought of a team in the whole NFL, just because of the size of Jacksonville, of that market. And they are the really only professional sports team in Jacksonville. I mean, they're just one of a team in the four or five major American sports leagues. And yeah, it just really makes them, be that sense of an afterthought. Again, Trevor Lawrence, if he was playing in New York or Chicago or Boston or just one of the bigger markets, his career probably would have been much more scrutinized than it's actually been in Jacksonville. And the fact that they've been able to retool this year, because again, they're a team that, I mean, the Urban Meyer catastrophe notwithstanding, they were able to kind of have a promising initial run with Doug Peterson that really just kind of fell apart quite quickly in the next following 2 years. And again, with a quarterback that has the amount of talent and promise that Lawrence still has, the fact that they've been able to kind of patch things up and retool and be a team that's kind of found their flow and their effectiveness to their game. It's just, it's just a great story. And I think not dissimilar to the Chicago Bears, for example. They've been a team that's been able to squeeze out a lot of wins out of bad performances. And I mean that in a complimentary way. A team that's kind of been growing, has kind of been finding themselves, Liam Cohen trying to leave his mark on this team and really guide them to reach next levels. The fact that you're able to grow while winning is a great sign, I think, for the potential the team can have for the following weeks and the following few seasons. Cause when you're able to juggle subpar performances and convert them into wins, that really helps the mood all around. And I think it helps a team believe and trust in what they're doing and perform better and execute better. Because again, if everyone's feeling better, more confident from the wins, I think it just allows everything to flourish that much more easily.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more. Other games that happened on Sunday, the Vikings became the first team in years to be shut out, and then the following week, shut out a team as they beat the Commanders 31-0.
Shortest game ever, I think I read the stat between the Commanders and the Vikings by really? Shortest game in the history of the NFL. Obviously all games are 60 minutes of playable time, but I'm pretty sure I read that it was the shortest game ever by total duration from when it started to when it ended. Let's see, I'm gonna see if I can pull out the confirmation of that. 2 hours and 39 minutes, the total amount of time it took from the first whistle to the final whistle, to use European football parlance.
Wow, I didn't know that. I thought I was coming in with the most impressive stat about them being shut out and then shutting out, but that's even more impressive.
Both are pretty good. I mean, for me, a shout out to shutting out another team. I mean, it's quite remarkable for how ridiculous of a team the Vikings are right now with how bad they've performed on offense, to have that performance, even if it's against the Commanders after being brutalized by the Packers. I mean, it's quite remarkable.
Yeah, looking at here, it's 1992, the last time a team win by a shutout after getting shut out the previous game. I think they're saying here it was the Broncos in 92. They lost 30-0 in week 3 and then beat the Browns 12-0 in week 4. So nice. There we are. There's some NFL history there for anyone listening to the podcast. The Vikings. Yeah.
The Elway Broncos. I think there's a documentary that's just come out, I think, on Elway and the Broncos on Netflix. I'm pretty sure I saw that the other day. That's come out.
But my issue is that there's too many documentaries these days. There's a Dallas Cowboys one. There's this, there's that. And there's obviously multiple different platforms now, different streaming services. There's too many things to watch. I mean, there's one point in time I had America's Game to watch, Hard Knocks for the Bills, the Dallas Cowboys.
I mentioned it, that if someone wants to watch it, I don't think I am going to. I mean, because documentary doesn't mean what it used to mean. Yeah.
It's just, It's just too much content, too much stuff. I still haven't watched The Bill's Hard Knocks. I still haven't watched the Cowboys documentary. Because it's just too much to watch. I think there needs to be some sort of slowing down, I think, of all these different documentaries. I don't see it slowing down personally, but I do think there's so much stuff to watch.
I mean, I don't think it's slowing down. I would say, like, not all of them are must see again, because again, documentaries don't, I think a lot of people struggle with just the idea that there's so many of them, just because of like the idea we have in our heads of like what a documentary used to mean, or like the level and quality a documentary, like the term documentary had attached to it. So I think, yeah, they're just watered down versions. Again, they're kind of forgettable and they're fine. You can kind of see some interesting little tidbits, but I don't think, again, I'm not watching most of them because I just don't think they're worth my time. They're perfectly fine for what they are. They fill time. I think they're great for like the fans of those teams to kind of have a greater depth of like kind of the history and the nostalgia of it. But yeah, it's just at the level they're producing them, you just can't keep up. And I don't think the quality of them necessitate you having to keep up with every single one of them.
Yeah, I think you're probably right. There was a shock win for the Saints as they beat the Buccaneers 24-20 to put the Buccaneers NFC South hopes in further jeopardy. And the Broncos keep at the top of the AFC seedings as they beat the Raiders by 24-17. And the Rams but dominated the Cardinals as they won by 45-17. And before we go on to Sunday Night Football, Bears-Packers was, of course, a game, Andy, that you had a lot of a keen eye on in this game. Friend of the show, Ash, was actually at the game. And so you got to see a thriller as the Packers won by 28-21, moving them to the top of the NFC North. And they moved the Bears from the number one seed in the NFC to the seventh seed. Andy, I'll let you go first, as you're a Bears fan. What's your take on the performance and the game overall?
I'm pretty encouraged overall. It was bitterly disappointing to lose in that fashion with that game-winning interception for the Packers, obviously. That stung quite badly. It was a fun game to watch. I mean, I'm usually a red zone watcher, even with Bears games on, but like this one had to like be watched in full with no other red zone distractions of any other games. So yeah, I was really, really zoomed in on this game. And I mean, it was great fun to watch, especially the second half. Again, the Packers-Bears rivalry is interesting because it is one of the bitterest rivalries in American sports. Again, a lot of rivalries in American sports don't compare to, I don't know, football in Europe, for example, but within the American context, it is one of like the most heated rivalries. But at the same time, because the Packers have been so superior to the Bears for such long stretches of time, I mean, the Bears have just been a team that, yeah, has been hovering kind of below average line. They have never sort of been like atrocious to the level that Jaguars have been during many years, or the Browns, or the Raiders. But again, they've been a team that haven't quite kept up with the Packers. Again, as the Packers had Favre and then Rodgers and then now Jordan Love. But the fact that there's a sense of in the team now that they can compete and they can stand toe-to-toe with the Packers is, I think, the most encouraging sign of that game. A lot of Packers fans, I've seen a lot of chatter of this, like, do kind of want to drive the point home that it wasn't that close, that there was probably a couple penalties, holding penalties not called against Micah Parsons. Again, are like penalties against the Bears that were kind of handsy with the star defender of the Green Bay Packers. And again, I think that's a fair point. I think that's something to highlight. The first half was very bad from Caleb Williams. As much of a believer as I am in him and his ability or his potential to become a very good NFL quarterback, he's still very inconsistent. And the fact that first half, him and the offense overall, but I think schematically and just kind of in every sense, the running game either wasn't working really well for the Bears. So you kind of had that story of the first half, and it felt in that first half, okay, the Packers are going to run away from it, and they're going to really show and cement the fact that they are, by talent, the superior team right now. Again, the Bears are a great story this year, but the fact that they are such a great story does show that they aren't at the level of the Packers, and they still aren't. But the fact, again, that they were able to make it close and they were able to come back from such a disappointing first half and really have a lot of plays that were very impressive, even throughout kind of Caleb's problems and situational awareness of not being as precise and as sharp as you maybe would want him to be. Again, it was a very compelling game that got decided on the very kind of last play of it. What I make of it is, yeah, I think that's very many positive, encouraging signs from the Bears. The fact that they are able to like kind of match up this way with the Packers, and we'll see in a couple of weeks at Soldier Field if they can reverse fortunes.
Yeah, I think with him, to me, has definitely had a really good second year. I think he's been a lot of positive moments. I mean, even in this game alone, the way he's able to, you know, scramble out of the pocket and make the moves. I mean, that pass to Cole Kmet was, and the catch itself, were both just excellent. Yes. I got to praise the Packers, because in particular, I want to praise Keyshawn Nixon, because he's a guy that I've followed a lot this year. I've been really impressed with his tape this year. I mean, he's second in the league right now when it comes to passes defended. And I think, you know, he's managed to get, you know, the 30th most tackles in the league amongst any player from the cornerback position. It's sort of in a nickel sort of type of cornerback. And yeah, I thought for him, though, he's made sort of really key plays and key moments. I mean, there was a game, I believe it was against Commanders, where he had like the most passes defended in a game. I think it was 5, most since 2018. Mm-hmm. But I think for me, you know, in this game, what really impressed me was the final drive for the Bears. He made the crucial play, interception, you know, in the end zone. Yeah. And I think he's been, I think, sort of gone under the radar from this Packers team. If you think about the defense as a unit, I mean, Micah Parsons has got so much of the media coverage, and he's quite rightly has, because he's been brilliant. The impact he's made on the rest of the D-line has been excellent as well. But I feel like Keyshawn Nixon, you know, a guy who's coming in to be Jair Alexander's replacement, a really important player for the Packers over the year, Alexander before his move. So he's got big shoes to fill, and he's coming in, and I think he's done really well this year. And I think, you know, when chips are down in the biggest moment, you know, week 14, it's, you know, it's post-Thanksgiving. The game's all so crucial at this point of the year. I was just really impressed with how he managed to make the plays and in that moment, especially to steal the game and what could be a really important result, not just winning the division, but also for seedings. And, you know, that could be the difference between hosting a divisional round game or hosting a championship game or being the road team. So I think, yeah, fair play to Nixon. I was really impressed with what I saw from him, not just in this game, but just the season in general.
Yeah. I know the Packers have really kind of improved on all fronts after kind of their wobbles kind of midway through the season. They've been kind of able to like retool, reset on the fly and be again, I think, the team that they should be, talent wise, coaching wise. The fact that everything had gotten so chaotic and the discourse had gotten so loud over LaFleur's kind of abilities and game management and whatnot. I think, again, he's proven, again, with some wobbles, some squibbles that he can still improve on, obviously. But I think, he's been the coach for the Packers now for 7 years. He arrived in 2019. And again, I think, yeah, they had a pretty significant hiccup this year that they could have probably avoided. But the fact that they've kind of recomposed themselves this way, and again, Nixon being a giant part of that, and Parsons being a force of nature, and week by week just being more and more impactful for the Packers, and just being more settled into the whole team, has just really gone to show just how good they are, how good they can be. And Jordan Love kind of to like top that all off, and Christian Watson had a great game coming back from injury against the Bears. Like, just kind of everything, just how well they've done. And again, just how well Love's also done. Like, I think he's like number one in EPA per play right now in the NFL, ahead of May and Josh Allen and Darnold and Stafford. So I think that really goes to show how good they are, how good they can be, even through, again, some trials and tribulations. And I think the performance against the Bears just kind of showed how good they can be on offense, and especially on defense with Parsons, and as you really nicely highlighted there, Nixon.
Well, let's move on to our final game, which was last night's Sunday Night Football, as the Texans traveled to Arrowhead and took on the Chiefs. And the Texans won by 20-10, which now moves the Texans to 8-5 and just one win behind the Jags in the AFC South. And it now moves the Chiefs to 6-7, with their chance of winning the AFC West are all but done. That'll be the first time since 2015 a team has won it who isn't the Chiefs. But this now means so much for the playoff seedings, because now, I mean, the Chiefs are fortunate that Daniel Jones is out injured, because that might open a door for them to sneak in. But if the Chargers win tonight against the Eagles, well, I say tonight, when his podcast is out, the game will be done, but it's in about 3 hours time of recording. If the Chargers win that game, there'll be three wins off two of the three teams currently occupying the wildcard spots in the AFC, and there's only five games left. So if the Chargers win tonight, there is it's a massive chance. Now they're not going to make it. I mean, they're currently marking it as 15% chance of making the playoffs, which for a team that made the Super Bowl last year almost had a three-peat, it's just a shocking turn of events. And yeah, I just thought that the Chiefs looked really off it. I mean, Mahomes still found times now and again to, you know, to make, you know, crucial plays and sort of keep them in it. But you could tell that the O-line, obviously, three injuries already in that O-line, and they were already struggling before the injuries took place. And you think about the receiving help is has its moments, but it's nowhere near what other teams have. But this Texans defense really turned up, because Stroud, you know, they were 10-0 down at halftime, and they managed to get back to 10-10, and you know, I think the Chiefs defense really turned up second half, but you could really tell what they were lacking. There was quite a few drops in this game. Kelce had a drop. Rashee Rice had a drop. So it was a real, I thought second half was a real defensive battle. I thought both quarterbacks were struggling, but I thought Stroud, some of the throws he made in that sort of second half. I mean, there was that throw to Elijah Higgins on third down. Chris Jones was sort of coming at him, and he managed to escape the sack in an amazing way. Kamari Lassiter managed to make key plays on third down. Stingley as well getting involved with some key tackles to move the fourth down. So this Texas defense was really impressive. The offense, Stroud made some really good throws in crucial moments when at times they weren't clicking. You know, they managed to almost let that, you know, that game get away from them. I was really impressed with the Texans. Now, are they a team that I think is going to win the AFC? No. But I think as a defensive unit, I thought it was a really, really impressive performance from them. And the Chiefs, yeah, now they're in massive jeopardy.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, it's funny that the Texans are incredible on defense. Like, they probably have the best pass rush in the whole league, and top five-ish secondary. I think Derek Klassen of The Athletic was kind of making that thought on The Athletic football show yesterday. Yeah, and I think it's just it's just a team that's just so impressive on defense. The fact how they are able to like will games in their favor just by just this sheer quality and force of their defense. Like, I think they're one of the defenses the blitzes the least in the whole league, just because they just don't need to. Their guys are better than almost every other offensive line they face. It's just wild just to watch just how ferocious they are, how skilled they are, again, because their level of coordination and just order to like the chaos they bring on other teams. It's just staggering. It's just staggering, astounding, really. And yeah, I think this was an incredible test of that, to see just how, to what degree they could push that, and they could push it all the way to leaving the Chiefs kind of down and out. Again, the Chiefs still have a chance to make it. We can get into that a little bit later, but yeah, as far as the the Texans, yeah, with Al-Shaird also, Azeez Al-Shaird having that key play at the end of the game to kind of seal it in the favor of the Texans. That kind of that those kinds of moments, those kinds of plays are, I think, a great sign for the potential the Texans have. I mean, this is a Texans team that destroyed the Chargers last year in the playoffs, that, like, I think had a pretty competitive game with the Chiefs precisely against the team in Kansas City. I mean, in the same stadium last January. So yeah, it's just very interesting to see to what degree they can be competitive, to what degree of teams they can beat. We were kind of mentioning possible opponents for the Bills in the playoffs. They seem to have the Bills' number. I mean, they seem to be a team that can really neutralize Josh Allen, and they have enough poise and enough juice kind of in that offense. And I think the return of Stroud to replace David Mills, I think, is a great sign for them also, just because even though Stroud has really been up and down when he was playing earlier this year and also last year, the fact that he kind of has that obvious next level he can go to if he's kind of feeling it, if he's inspired enough, if the team's kind of clicking. And right now the offense seems to be clicking a little bit better, just by contrast to how terrible they were in the first few weeks of the season. So yeah, it's just very interesting to see how they've been able to kind of power through those doubts, because again, it's a team that started 0-3, and that's never ideal in such in a sport with such a short schedule, short season. So yeah, I think hats off to them, to like the job D'Amico Ryans has been able to do as their coach, as their head coach, as the defensive play caller. Yeah, and it's just, yeah, when a defense plays to this to this level of greatness, it's just something very fun to watch in the NFL. And right now the Texans are probably overall the best defense.
Yeah, I mean, 5 wins in a row as well. I mean, impressive from them. And, you know, I've seen teams win Super Bowls with a bad quarterback and a good defense, or maybe an average quarterback and a great defense. But I've never seen a team with a bad defense win a Super Bowl. So I think it goes to show, if you've got a good defense, then, you know, that is, you know, that you're halfway there towards winning stuff. And I think Stroud, you know, obviously his rookie year was by far his best year, but I think even in games since, in playoff games against, I remember the game against the Chiefs last year, if their kicking was better and they hadn't made those errors, I think there was a few fumbles or drops, you know, they could have won that game against the Chiefs in Arrowhead. I think Stroud has had, in big moments, in crucial games, has made the big throws. I think in this game you saw it again on crucial third downs. There was one, I can't think who it was, two, but it was one he made in the fourth quarter where it was like something like 3rd and 17, or maybe it was in the third quarter, but it was a 3rd and 17 play. It looked dead to rights, and he made it an amazing throw. So
yeah, and I think, I'm not sure if it's the same one that I'm thinking, but I think like the pocket had collapsed and he was like being hit, and like he was just kind of had to scramble through it, and he was able to pull the throw off. Yeah, like there was a few moments like those that really kind of shined a light on his ability to like kind of reach that next degree, that next gear of greatness, or of really quality play. So yeah, no, that was great to see.
And the Chiefs, you mentioned it before, but you know, they're not just today, you know, they're 2 wins behind the Bills, or they're 3 wins behind the Bills, they're 2 wins behind the Texans and the Chargers. Chargers could make that 3, but the Bills have already beaten them, and so they've already got the head-to-head on that. That's an extra game on that sense. Same with the Texans, they beat the Chiefs. So really, it's a 3-game gap between the Texans and the Chiefs. The Chargers beat them in week 1. You know, if they can, if they can win, they can make that, you know, even more of a gap. So really, it leaves open how do they get in. I mean, right now, Bills, Chargers, and Texans have all got at least a 2-win gap over them. And the Chiefs have got the Lions coming up next. They've got a tough end of the season. The Colts, I think they'll, you know, they've beaten them this season. They'll probably go past them. I can see the Chiefs being above the Colts come the end of the season. But I'm looking at the rest. I mean, I don't see where they get in. And I think if there's any team you want to write off, don't write off the Chiefs, because they proved it in the last 7 years. You know, there's a reason why Mahomes has never been out earlier than the championship game in his career as a starter. But I just think the way the Chargers are the one, the Chargers are the Chargers for a reason. They find ways to lose games. So I think I'm looking at the Texans and the Bills, and I just don't see any way the Bills or Texans don't have this collapse where they lose out to the Chiefs. I think really their only hope is beating the Chargers in their next game, and it's to just hope that they can just charge her up. But even then, you've got the Ravens 6-7, same as them, the Dolphins 6-7, and it's looking hard. It's looking hard, and there's talk about Kelce. Is this the end? I think Mahomes made quite a cryptic comment in his press conference yesterday. I've seen Chiefs fans criticize. I think Andy Reid. I think that's absolutely insane. But yeah, it seems like for the first time in his career, he's going to miss out on the playoffs. Which I think, as fans, I talked about it with Daniel Harper in our Week 13 review. I think as fans, I think it's quite a refreshing thing for us, because I was saying I've only seen a Super Bowl in full once that hasn't got either Brady or Mahomes, and that was Bengals Rams. Whether it's the Patriots dynasty, whether it's the Chiefs dynasty, I've never seen many of the AFC quarterbacks make it in. So I think for most NFL fans, I think when you see a team who wins it often to not be in the playoffs, I think it's just something new, it's something fresh, it's something refreshing for NFL fans.
Yeah, no, absolutely. I was just doing that same kind of thought process. Okay, yeah, the Bengals and Rams in 22. I remember, before that, I was already around the NFL. I saw Manning and Cam Newton and the Broncos and Panthers in 16. Before that, and I think the first Super Bowl I remember seeing live, like being able to staying up and watching live back when I was still in Spain before I moved to the States, were the Ravens and Niners. But yeah, other than that, like Brady was almost always there, and then Mahomes kind of took that baton. But yeah, it's just it's a fascinating one. I think the way to understand this this Chiefs season is to fuse it with last year, because I think it's a team that hasn't had that much turnover, and it's a team that won all those one score games last year, whereas they've lost every one score game this year. Every game they've lost this year, except for the Texans this weekend, has been by one score. And it's just one of those that is one of those trends, I think, that just kind of reverted to the mean in a very violent way. Because again, they rode their luck to such an insane degree last year that it's in some ways normal, even though the fact that it's been kind of this kind of sharp way is kind of odd in and of itself. But yeah, I think when you kind of put both seasons together, they're not quite as bad as being like right below average team. And they weren't quite as good as being like almost an undefeated team last year. So I think, again, they're kind of in a middle point between those two places, being a good team, a division winner, a team that's in the playoffs with a positive record. But I think it just kind of is one. It's a pretty unique story of a team that was just much better than kind of their performance suggested last year. And this year, they're just worse. I think that even their performances suggest there's a lot of tiny little things. I think the criticism of Andy Reid, I think there can be like, there can be relevant or fair to a degree where the Chiefs are a team that had really been overperforming their talent, and it really worked when Andy Reid was very on top of his game and like creating these advantages for his team constantly. I think he's lost a little bit of a step this year. I think he can get it back. I think next year they can reform, retool, and be a great team again, because Andy Reid is one of the best coaches, one of the best offensive minds that the sport has ever seen. So I think they'll be able to like bounce back from it. But I think just a year with all, whereas last year, again, all those tiny things went in their favor. This year, all the tiny little things are going against them. And it's just one of those kind of awkward trends that just kind of has caught them kind of off guard. I think they maybe planning wise, roster construction wise, they probably got a little too confident with how good they actually were, with how well last season went. But yeah, on one hand, I think it's quite, I mean, that maybe embarrassing is maybe too harsh of a word, but again, for a team with that level of quarterback that didn't have a devastating injury to in the middle of his quote unquote prime to lose out on the playoffs is quite a bad look, just because I think Robert Mays, also of The Athletic, made this point that the Patriots never did this. Like, the only year they missed the playoffs during the Brady reign was the year he injured himself and Matt Castle had to play. So the fact that the Chiefs might have this stain on their overall dynasty legacy is a little bit of a bad look. But again, I think just when a sport has such a short season, to kind of reiterate the point that I've been hammering throughout the show, it's just one of those things that can happen. It's a little bit of an accident, a little bit of a kind of succession of errors that has led up to this point. We'll see if they're still able to bounce back. But right now, the feel of the team is of a team that I don't think is going to be able to bounce back, even if the Chargers implode and they lose all the rest of their like offensive linemen and they really aren't able to win another game from here to the end. But it's going to be interesting until like they're completely mathematically out of it.
Absolutely. And you mentioned that. I mean, even the Patriots that won Matt Castle season, they still got 11 wins, which most
years.
Yeah,
exactly. So even they missed out on the playoffs, but they still got 11 wins when the only six teams could get to the playoffs.
And I think also I saw this talked about when they're talking about the Brady Mahomes debate, which I think has been killed now. I think Brady is going to be always seen as a GOAT. But, you know,
he also beat him. So that one of it's just one of those things like Brady's level of winningness, to use a term, has just been so astounding. Like, Mahomes would have to match that and almost surpass it just because Brady beat him twice, once in the Super Bowl. So I think, yeah, it's even though he has an enormous amount of talent, in that conversation of best ever, Brady's just going to edge him out, I think, in almost every scenario.
Yeah, and also, they never had a loss quite like, I think there's been twice now where Mahomes lost heavily in the Super Bowl to the Buccaneers against Brady in 2020 season, and then the Super Bowl against the Eagles. The Patriots never had a Super Bowl loss. You know, you think about their three losses. You had the Nick Foles Philly special, the David Tyree helmet catch, and the Mario Manningham miracle catch three years later. So they've lost three Super Bowls, literally, by miracles and others. And they almost...
One score.
And you all did it again. Yeah. You think about the Seahawks when they won that game, the catch by Curse, which would have been one of the greatest catches of all time if they'd won that game, which they should have won that game if they ran the ball. And then you think about Julio Jones's catch for the Falcons, which was, again, overshadowed by Edelman in Super Bowl 51. So really, yeah, they've had so many close games that they've never been blown out. Before we do go, I want to ask you two questions. I'm now asking all fans towards the end of the year. Now, let's say you get an email, Ander, one day saying, we're giving you a vote in the MVP. You reply back to the email with which player?
For this year? MVP for this year?
Yeah.
I mean, Love's playing great. Drake May's playing great. And he has kind of that factor of, like, the unexpected and, oh, my God, like, kind of came out of left field, even though he showed promise last year. And even though Josh Allen has been also great for the Bills, there's just still something, again, with how deteriorated his body has been, quote-unquote, even though it hasn't really shown. But with all the injuries he's had and all the years have been racked up, obviously, the fact that Matthew Stafford is playing at this level, again, he's, I think, top five in EPA per play this year for quarterbacks. My vote would go to Stafford. Everyone else has been really good. I think it would be fine if you give it to Love, to Drake May, to Josh Allen, but or even to Dak Prescott, to throw out a name of it again, of a team, a guy on a team that hasn't performed all that well, but he has probably had his best year as an NFL quarterback. My vote would go to Stafford. I just think the level he's been able to execute when it really felt like this would be like the last year, like he would maybe have like a Peyton Manning last year in Denver type of year where like the defense would be really good and he would have good offensive weapons but not the capability to execute at the highest level. The fact that he's come back and had this kind of year, for me, that my vote would be to him.
Yeah, same. It's been mine for the past four episodes now. When you've asked this question, it's been Matt Stafford for a while. It's also been Broncos Rams for a couple of weeks. I'm sticking with that as my Super Bowl a prediction for matchup. But for you, Ander, who do you think will be the two teams playing in San Francisco in Super Bowl 60 in February?
Oof, that's a real good one. I'm gonna say Rams. I think Seahawks are a really good team. The Packers could pull it off. I think the Bears could go on a sort of miracle run also and maybe kind of squeeze through. I don't think that's obviously likely, but yeah, I think I'm going to stick with the Rams just because of how good they are on both sides of the ball, both on offense and defense. And again, Packers and Seahawks could be equatable to some degree. And the AFC is just so hard to pick one. I mean, it's just, I don't, the Broncos are just, I don't think they're that good on offense. Again, they're really well coached. They have all these wins in a row. Their defense is playing lights out. I just don't quite see them having that little extra edge in the playoffs with Bo Nix and that offense. So I am going to say, even though they're on the flip side, their defense isn't all that great or all that impressive, I'm going to say it's going to be Bills-Rams, the Super Bowl. I think the Bills are going to break through again on the back of Josh Allen, like a human Buffalo man. They just like playing out of his mind with the Bills. And I think, yeah, he's going to be able to take them to a Super Bowl, even if, again, their defense is still kind of suspect, kind of jury still out to see how they can do in the playoffs. But I'm going to stick with Rams against the Bills.
To be fair, like, yeah, I know I said Broncos, Rams, but I do think that Matt Stafford against Josh Allen is way more appealing than Matt Stafford against Bo Nix.
Yeah.
So, yeah. Interesting.
But
that will be where we'll end the show for today, our week 14 review. So, Ander, first of all, thank you for coming on. Thank you for making your debut on the show.
No, thank you for inviting me. I had a lot of fun. I was really looking forward to it, as I said at the start. And it was super, super enjoyable. I always love to get to do these things. Someone who also does a lot of their coverage in Spanish. Like, I have a lot, I'm on a Spanish NFL podcast. I like to do this in English. It's also a ton of fun. Meeting you was great. And again, being able to do this and kind of, yeah, go back and forth on what this week 14 was like was super fun, super intellectually stimulating. And yeah, no, thanks so much for having me, and hopefully we can do it again in the future.
Absolutely. That'll definitely be happening, I'm sure of it. And for those who are listening or watching on YouTube, where can they find you on socials?
Yeah, if you search my name, Ander Iturali, as they see it written either in the description of their listening to the podcast or on screen if they're watching it. Yeah, just search my name on Twitter, Instagram, Substack. Also, they can find all my stuff. I do a lot of, I tweet a lot out in English. So even though I do a lot of Spanish and English, they can find me there. I'm a Spanish NFL podcast. If anyone wants to practice their Spanish, they can search for El Capologist, or if they want a Premier League podcast in Spanish, they have mine. It's Alineación Indebida. But yeah, other than that, just yeah, search for me on Twitter, on Substack, on Instagram. They can find me at Andrei Turaldi. Yeah, and that's pretty much it. That's where they can find me. And yeah, hopefully I left a good impression on all your listeners.
Well, if you want to give them a follow, then make sure you do. But in the meantime, this has been the Across the Pod NFL podcast, our week 14 review, with your host, as always, myself, Andy Davis, with our guest today in Ander Iturali. And we'll see you guys next time. Take care. Adios.